Today is the day we tune out the noise about health, the confusion and the misinformation. How many grams of protein, how much sleep, how many steps a day? Today, we can see the truth of what's happening inside our own bodies in real time. Use Lingo to monitor your glucose and see what works for your unique metabolism. Lingo, your body has the answers. Lingo is not for medical use and is intended for users 18 years and older. Do not use Lingo if you are pregnant. Lingo is a mark of Abbott.
There's digging, and then there's super digging. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods.
Henry Winter. For those of you who are not familiar with Henry, Henry was the chief writer for The Independent, The Telegraph, and The Times. And he has covered world football since 1990. And really had a great chat with him. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So after Henry, I'll come back with my thoughts on the game. Until then, have fun.
Joined by Henry Winter of World Soccer. Henry, we are in Gelsenkirchen for the England-Serbia game, but lots more to talk about before we get to there. Tell me, you've been covering international football. How much has the game changed?
Oh, beyond all recognition, and our industry's changed as well. I mean, look, you're doing this now. You know, you've probably got the Wi-Fi here. The technology now is just, it's made this job easier in terms of you go into a ground, you can file on the Wi-Fi, you don't literally, I mean, when I started out in the mid-80s, I would literally rush out of the ground, knock on someone's door, can I use your phone to ad lib copy, and then, you know what the mistake's like and everything. Whereas now, you can do the whole thing almost on your iPhone. So that's, the technology has accelerated it from our industry's perspective, but it's also accelerated the polemicism from the public and pundits and people like me in the media, because you can now just get your view out. I mean, we're sitting here, there are a few England fans, one in a Harry Kane number 9 shirt on, because he's going to play tonight. And, you know, he's just doing some exercises. This is the modern England fan, they're doing exercises, they're not throwing things. And if he falls over and gets injured, if you want to tweet about that, you can tweet about it immediately. You know, journalism used to be the first draft of history, and now it's social media because of the immediacy of it. I was watching training yesterday morning down in Weimar, where England are based. Jordan Pickford took a half volley smack in the face, and it didn't knock him out, but it knocked him over and he was lying down on the ground. Immediately you can tweet something like that, and then 2 minutes later you're getting calls from people saying, can we use the photograph? And mine was just a picture on the iPhone. So in terms of the how the industry has changed, it's beyond all recognition. The sport has changed. I think Southgate's right. Southgate always say, love the sport, hate the industry. And I think there's an element of that. I mean, the corporate element, you can see it here at the European Championships, particularly in the Premier League. It's not quite strangling the game, but it's certainly inhibiting the game, and it's inhibiting it for the younger audience. That they would term themselves the legacy fans, the ones who are there through thick and thin, the hardcore fans. And it's opened up more for what's slightly dismissively called the tourists, those who come in for the day, pay over the odds for a ticket, and then of course and the clubs are doing Mexican waves over this, go and spend $100 in the club shop. But you know, the beauty of football is it's fairly indestructible. You know, they can try to wreck it, you know, FIFA and UEFA and some of the clubs and the owners can try to wreck it. But then, you know, with luck we'll see this evening Phil Foden will get on the ball. And you'll just see that connection with the fans, with the street, is still there. Jude Bellingham will get on the ball and he'll sort of play 1-2s with Harry Kane, a 10 and a 9 in perfect harmony. And you'll sit there and in a way all the sort of the dirt of the game is washed away by the beauty of the football. So, yeah, I'm still in love with the game, but you know you do get your toes run over occasionally.
So the last, yeah, absolutely. You know, the last time England were in Germany for a major tournament, 2006. Yes, I was actually. That's right. I was at this game, and once again, I was going to say save it for another part of the pod, but you know, obviously that 0-0. Owen Hargreaves was our best player that day. He was absolutely fantastic. And then, of course, we lose on penalties. And
it's not like England.
And Rooney steps on Cavallo's knackers, and you know, it's one of those days, huh?
And then we get the Ronaldo wink, and then Ronaldo and Rooney. Who were obviously playing at Manchester United at the time. Steven Gerrard got on the team coach afterwards with sort of steam coming out of his ears and saying, that Ronaldo. And Rooney was basically just texting Ronaldo saying, no harm, mate, see you at pre-season training. I might be there slightly before you. So, and then, but, you know, that's Rooney's good-natured, or maybe his realisation that people do things to get people sent off to win games.
Well, I'm glad we mentioned 2006, actually, because that was supposedly England's golden generation, and yet they failed, and you followed them. Why did they fail?
Club cliques.
You really think it was club cliques?
A lot of that, yeah. One or two tactical things by Sven. You have Paul Scholes, one of the best passers in English history, tucked in on the left. That didn't work. That was less here, more 2004, but part of the golden generation. I mean, you look at the centre-halves in that golden generation who were available here, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Sol Campbell and Jamie Carragher. And you just think probably only John Stones and a fit, informed John Stones, the current four, will get into that four. So they were really good players and they were doing well for their clubs. You remember Istanbul, you know, Gerrard and Carragher, their fantastic performances. But I think there was a club element. I mean, I remember talking to Gerrard, helped him write his book, although he just talked and I just press play or record and then play, and he just said the first time he reported for England duty, went into the hotel, he was dead serious about this. He thought that Gary Neville was going to jump out from a potted plant in the reception at the England hotel and mug him. And you're going, seriously? He said, because there was that rivalry. I think that's great that there was the rivalry between the clubs, but it's not healthy for trying to build a team if you've got Manchester United players on one table and Liverpool on another. You don't have that preponderance of the top clubs. I mean, players from the most clubs, I'm not very good with words, is Crystal Palace with four. You know, that's great. And, you know, no one really dislikes Crystal Palace apart from Brighton and Lewis Dunk's intelligent to rise above that. So tactical things, emotional things, and Southgate just saw that and addressed it. And he's one of the key things they did, which doesn't really get much recognition, is that instead of just having under 15s, under 17s, under 19s and under 21s, then onto the seniors, they had an age group every year. So there was under 15s, under 16s, 17s, 18s, 19s, 20s. So it basically doubled the age group programme. And it's a really boring subject and people's eyes glaze over when you mention it. But it's really important because the players from 15, they built up this rapport with other players and they knew them twice as well as they would have done before. So you'll get Foden will have been in a team with Mark Gay or whatever, and they would have built up that relationship and said, oh, great to see you. See you at the next England trip, which will be about five or six a year from under 15 level onwards into under 16s. So Southgate was partly involved in that when he was working at the FA. So, but also the most important thing, he's probably taken the fear out of the shirt. The players love reporting for duty. There isn't that Capello, you can't have tomato sauce. It's far more of a sort of collective, engaging atmosphere. And also, England got some fantastic players in attacking areas because the FA and the Premier League said, we're not making number 10s. So they went out and tried to coach number 10s. And now England, number 10s, you know, Foden will play on the left, but he's a number 10. Bellingham, obviously, he can play anywhere, but he's a number 10. Cole Palmer can come off the bench, players are number 10. James Maddison, Jack Grealish didn't get out here and there, number 10s. And then as we saw last night or the night before, Jamal Musiala, you know, he's English, born in England, well, raised in England, in the English age group system. He's a fantastic 10, so, you know. But, yeah, so a range of things. So Southgate, very, very important in changing the culture, rebuilding relationship with fans, which had gone to pieces under Hodgson and Allardyce. So he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Why do you think the shirt has been so heavy over the years? Because obviously, you know, we've not won a major tournament in, is it 60 years now? 62 years. And that's been a major...
58. 58. 58. My maths is terrible. Yeah. Please, we've not been sitting here 3 years, have we?
Yeah, that's right.
It's quite long.
And I don't understand that. I mean, we used to go into the press room any time, and now they're saying 4 o'clock. I mean, unbelievable. But the weight of the shirt. What, you've spoken with so many English players over the years. Why do you think it was so heavy?
The club rivalry. Is, you know, the club rivalry in England is like, I mean,
but we still have a club rivalry though.
We do, but it's a spread of the players are from a spread of clubs. I mean, it was interesting. Harry Kane was talking last night about when he travels around Germany, he doesn't get much stick from opposing fans. I mean, sorry, with respect, that would not happen in England. You know, if Harry Kane walked past Arsenal in his Tottenham pomp, he would get a little bit of stick. So now,
did you see the picture? What the top goal scorer in Germany gets? It's a cannon. It looks like.
Oh, is it brilliant? Oh, brilliant!
It's the Arsenal cannon.
Do you know who says the Germans haven't got a sense of humour? That's just brilliant. So why is it better now?
The weight of the shirt.
Weight of the shirt. Partly media. I think there was certainly not now, but I think there has been in the past a little bit of an arrogance. We invented the game. We codified it. We won it in '66. You know, we've now got the best league in the world. I think there was maybe a little bit of arrogance amongst the media. I'd say I probably had that 10, 15 years ago. But Gerard made a very important point coming away from here. You know, he just said, we went round Germany blowing our own trumpets and came home mute with embarrassment. So I think there was an element of realism on the players' part. And, you know, I know we're in Ireland, but there's some fabulous teams out there. You know, the Colonel Blimp mentality simply cannot be sustained when you look at the, you know, the quality of Spain. People weren't saying much about Spain going to the tournament. They were good. Germany, even the Germans were having a go at Spain. Look at them the other night. You know, Italy, that resilience. So, yeah, why did the shirt hang so heavy? 66 was a huge thing. I also think, I don't want to be patronising effectively towards myself, I don't think there was a level of thought process about the game, whether that was at the Football Association, whether there was that in the coaching fraternity, whether that was in the media amongst the players. I just don't think we delved into things that the Italians do at Curvaciano, as the Germans do with their coaching structure. I think we had to grow up.
So, it's really probably a rude question. Why do you love football?
Why? Oh my God. I mean, it's like saying, why do I like breathing? So, boys, at 4 o'clock. Yeah, that's why we couldn't get in yesterday, Johnny. Why do I love football?
Because for me, my wife looks at me and she says, as I've, you know, watched 5 Premier League games in a row, she said, can't you get enough? And I reply, no, because I always see something I've never seen before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at the football now. You look at the quality of it. I mean, I always find it fascinating when I see people going to games and they think they know what's going to happen. You know, predictions. I really admire the pundits, and obviously they've got the expertise and the dressing room knowledge, but predicting football. I mean, Barcelona 1999. I mean, I'd written the full-time whistle of the Champions League final. You know, Ferguson, tactically outwitted, English heartache continues, Manchester United searching for it. How on earth could they play 3 central midfield, 3 wide players in central midfield? And then a minute later, you know, Sheringham. And then a minute after that, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's, if a lot of life is regimented, the joyous, unscripted element of football is wonderful. So, yeah, I love that. It's the beauty as well. I mean, I played at a really, really low level, but I loved that. And I loved that, coming here and the drama and the camaraderie and the unpredictability. And also, very selfishly, it's a fantastic excuse for me to swan around and go to places. I mean, I've been here, 4 or 5 days? I've been to a Bauhaus museum in Weimar, which is not my favourite type of architecture, but it was an opportunity to see it. I speak a bit of German, so speaking to the locals. It's an opportunity to drive 120 miles an hour, which they tend to discourage down Oxford Street in London. I went and paid my respects at Buchenwald, the concentration camp, which is, 20 kilometres from where England are based. Very, very just chilling, just horrendous. So it's that opportunity to explore, to meet new people, and I'm not very good at sitting at home.
How did you get into journalism, and was football the driving force behind it?
I'd be stacking shelves in Harrods if I wasn't doing this. Yeah, it's always been football. Football from a young age, playing, writing about it. I went to university and they basically said, don't really worry. I mean, it's quite an academic place, but they said, don't really worry about your degree as long as you. Basically, you're playing for the firsts and, you know, you're writing for the student newspaper. And I was sports editor there for 4 years. And it was, yeah, and then the day after my final exam, which I think I flunked, went straight down to London, down to...
There's digging, and then there's super digging. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods.
Today is the day we tune out the noise about health, the confusion and the misinformation. How many grams of protein, how much sleep, how many steps a day? Today, we can see the truth of what's happening inside our own bodies in real time. Use Lingo to monitor your glucose and see what works for your unique metabolism. Lingo, your body has the answers. Lingo is not for medical use and is intended for users 18 years and older. Do not use Lingo if you are pregnant. Lingo is a mark of Abbott.
At Betfred, we want to support all our customers in keeping their gambling fun.
My nephew bets with his mates and they do their ACCAs and everything together.
In his WhatsApp group, they all know how much they're betting.
We can all keep an eye on each other that nobody's going silly like
that. Similar to us, but I actually go into a shop and we all spend the same. That's the rule.
Betting socially is just one of the ways that you can gamble safely.
What do you stick to?
Five
each.
Yeah. Yeah. 25 years I've had that five.
How do you keep it fun? Gamble safely with Betfred.
Fleet Street and knocked on doors, had no connections. So... yeah, I mean, why does anything... I mean, my parents were just like, they're all artists and architects, and my brother's a very famous academic, my sister's quite a well-known artist. They were absolutely brilliant because they said, we don't care what you do, as long as you do it to 100%, to use that local recent phrase. Just to do it, your profession has to be your passion. And I think that's what I tell my kids. So I don't mind what you do, you know, just do it with all your heart. And that's why it's a privilege talking to a lot of these England players, because that's what they do. And some of them have come from difficult backgrounds, broken homes, racially abused as kids, food deprivation, real serious issues like that. And look at them now, you know, the nation, the eyes of the nation are going to be on those 11 going out there and wearing that shirt with pride. And then you see the type of things that they try and do. So this job, as I'm sure you know, started out covering headers and volleys. Now it is about breakfast clubs, it's about taking the knee against racism. It's, you know, Marcus Thuram stood up yesterday about the sort of, you know, the right wing evolution or in France. And these players do. And they are very impressive individuals, as Southgate is, as well as very good players.
Let's talk about football. You've covered thousands of games. I want to put you on the spot. Do you have a favourite game? Is there a game that you can recall like you were there yesterday?
You see, the crazy thing is, the games that are absolutely the worst to cover as a journalist, when it's all kicking off, when they're late goals, when they're red cards, when it's chucking it down with rain, are actually the best ones to write about. Because, say, Istanbul, 2005, Liverpool against Milan. You know, at half-time, I was writing the obituary of Liverpool and, you know, their Champions League's hopes for another season. This Liverpool fan walked up and he had a photographer's bib on. Liverpool fans get everywhere. And I said, are you going into Taksim Square to sort of drown your sorrows? And he said, no, it's not over. And he said, listen, and 40,000 Liverpool fans, well, those who managed to walk in from the centre of Istanbul, crazy place to have a game, you know, they were saying, you never walk alone. And Rafa Benitez down in the dressing room left the door open so the players could hear it. And just little things like that, you know, it's just magical. Yeah, so I'd probably say that one. One or two England ones. I've seen England win a penalty shootout, and it's, you know, looking at that building there, you know, still expect
memories.
Brings back very painful, you know, three missed penalties. I'm sure if we had a look through that hedge over there, we'd find a couple of them. So, yeah. But every game is different. You know, I mean, this might sound weird, but choosing your favourite football game, it's a bit like having to choose your favourite child. You know, they've all got their favourite album. They've all got different attractions.
I think talking to favourite games, one of my top three was the semi-final in 2006 at the Westfalen Stadium, Italy versus Germany. Were you at that game?
Did it? Probably was, yeah, because I stayed on for the, yes. Yes, I was. Honestly, they all blur into one.
Right.
Do you know what? Favourite moments? I'm not necessarily so good on games, but like Italia 90, which was the first World Cup I did, Brazil, Argentina in Turin, Stadio degli Alpi, the old stadium, and or the next old stadium. And Maradona had the ball. And of course, your eyes are fixated on Maradona because of who he is. But he played a ball with his right foot through to Caniggia, who rounded, I assume it was Taffarel, to score. And then the Brazilians just sent on centre-halves and decided just to chop Maradona to bits for the rest of the game. But it was, yeah, so sort of moments like that. And then Gerrard scoring the first goal in Istanbul and immediately grabbing the ball and just, you know, waving to the fans and waving to his teammates. Little things like that.
Well, you mentioned Maradona and you've seen Messi and it's always the big argument. So let's you and I have the big argument. Maradona or Messi?
Pele. Just to be provocative. Between, you know...
Well, we always have the argument, don't they? The fans always have the argument. Yeah. Is it Ronaldo? Is it Messi? Is it Pele? Is it Maradona?
Yeah. Well, I mean, whenever I write about Messi or write about Ronaldo, you get a sort of tsunami of sort of stick from the other side, which is the way it should be. And aren't we privileged? We've spent the last 20 years writing about these amazing players. I mean, Messi versus Ronaldo first. Messi is a work of beauty, and you think it's a God-given talent, whereas Ronaldo is... He obviously had a fantastic God-given talent, but he developed a lot of that. You know, you could see it in the way he's still playing now. Look at him; it's not now; it's a fat on. He's magnificent. But Ronaldo he's just magnificent to watch. But Messi gets you out of your seat. You know, just that beauty of his. I spent a year writing a book with Michael Carrick, and Carrick was talking about the Champions League final when he had to almost try and man mark Messi, and he said, you know, one of the very difficult things is because he's short, people politely call it low centre of gravity, he turns so quickly and he can put three steps into your two in that time, and that causes real chaos. And it really got to him, and he was quite down after that game. It was either the 2011 or the 2009 game. So I would have Messi between those two, but then Maradona. I mean, Messi kind of equaled it up a bit by being so good in Qatar. I would still go Maradona, because Maradona warming up, Maradona taking on... Maradona wasn't in a great team. Okay, you can say Messi wasn't in a great team, but he had a lot of... You know, there were some good players in there as well. So if I was going to vote, I would go Pele, Maradona, Messi. But, I mean, it's, you know, different generations, different boots, different diets, different pressures. I mean, Maradona... in Argentina, I mean, it was just crazy. In Napoli, it was crazy. Also, totally different characters as well. Messi's was slightly more withdrawn, a bit more family orientated, whereas Maradona was just an explosion.
Let's move forward into the future. I know the press office is going to open us for shortly. Obviously, a huge queue building. 2026, football coming to the United States of America. Now, you covered it in 94. Now we're back in the good old US of A. What are your thoughts on that particular World Cup and the fact that it's been expanded to 48 teams?
Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, I live in a small village in the middle of nowhere, and we're thinking of entering. I mean, it is... I hate it because it's... I understand, look, it's politics and FIFA, and they want to get everyone involved. But you know what? There has to be an element of... Sport is about elitism. Sport is about... You've got to compete to get there. And it's much easier to get there now. So it diminishes the qualifying campaigns, which will embolden the clubs, because they'll say you players don't really need to go. So that's potentially damaging there. But it will be a success, because Americans will make sure that it's a success. And there will be people there at the American Federation. They're Chicago, aren't they?
They're moving actually to Atlanta.
Oh, are they? Okay, right. Well, I've been to the ground there. Wow, that is just... I stood behind the goal there, actually, when Galaxy were playing. than you were playing. Yeah, but that's great. But yeah, 94. I mean, I can remember being in Chicago, and I can't remember what game I watched. Oh, I went to a, went and watched the game, and then I went on a local radio station. They said, "We got Mr. Winner from London, England here, who's coming to watch this soccer ball competition." And I talked about the beautiful game and gave it the spiel as I've given you, wonderful game. And then they said, "Right, we're going to open up the lines, phone in. We have these phone ins talking about, you know, the issues of the day, and you've talked so eloquently about this soccer ball thing that's going on." And anyway, we got John from downtown Chicago. "John, what's your point?" And there was this wonderful pause, and then John from downtown Chicago said, "Getting back to OJ," because it was when the OJ chase was going through the streets. And so it won't be like that. The knowledge, the interest. I mean, obviously, you've got, you know, there's a Hispanic community, as you know, living in LA. There's a, we'll have that huge interest. The Messi factor will be huge. Yeah, I think it will be, well, it'll be fine.
Does football need the US?
Well, you know what football's like. Football thinks that it owns the world. So, yeah, I think it does need the US. I mean, it's the, you know, it's the media capital of the world, technology, commercial. Some of the sponsors will have their bases or large bases in the States. Obviously, it's in Mexico and Canada as well. I mean, my worry is that who can now, particularly with the World Cup that side, who as an individual country can host it? You know, I would have liked to have seen it gone to Australia. And people say, oh, their problems with the time difference. It didn't affect the Lionesses and the Women's World Cup when it was in there and New Zealand. It was still good viewing figures. So I just think there's that element of, yeah, well, you know, take it around the world. The World Cup belongs to the world. It doesn't belong to the sort of, you know, the wealthiest countries.
Well, saying that, we're here in Germany, and this feels like a proper tournament. Many journalists I spoke to said that Qatar was not a proper tournament. Obviously, the COVID-affected Euros was very weird. Russia was kind of weird. So, I hate to say this, but does football need to be played in football countries for that real flavour to come through?
But this is a real football country, and the flavour has come through. Oh, I see, in terms of taking it around the world. Well, yeah, without sounding like a missionary, I do think that it needs to be taken around and spread around. And why can't it go to, say, Australia and maybe bump start the? Oh, look, you know, they've got the A League, they've got the interest in football. But why can't it? You know, we got Ange Postecoglou in at Tottenham. He'd be a good ambassador for it. I don't see. Yeah, I do like to see it around the world. I just think it's 48 is ridiculous because you can't have the majority of countries hosting it. And look, Japan, Korea was good, but actually I like going to places where it's a celebration of one culture, one country. I really enjoy that. And I was just based in Japan, apart from the semi-final, which is because England were just in Japan. And that was wonderful, just being able to focus on that. But I don't know, it's a bit of a... It can get distilled a bit, the effect.
Last question for you. Here we are, outside Gelsenkirchen, England about to start. Expectations are huge. You've seen England. Can they finally get across that final hurdle and bring us home a trophy?
It would be wonderful. And I've always said I'd retire when I see England lift a trophy. I've seen the women's team lift a trophy. I've seen the under-19s lift a trophy. I've seen the under-21s lift a trophy in the last sort of 2-3 years. I don't know, you look at the quality of the Germans the night before last, Spain, you look at France, you know, they're playing tomorrow night, Saliba might not even start, and that, how good he is, I don't know whether he or Konate is going to start. So, you know, there's so much strength elsewhere, but look, England have got an attacking six, a front six, which is absolutely outstanding, which you could, Mbappe apart, you could almost put up against France's top front six. But their problems in defence. Got a good goalkeeper in Jordan Pickford, better than people think. But the left side of defence is a concern. I mean, I think it's Southgate has to win it to keep his job. But I just look at the strength elsewhere and I think semi-finals.
Henry Winter, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Loved talking with Henry Winter. Such an interesting guy. Well, finally made it back to Cologne.
after quite an adventure. 4.5 hours to get back from Gelsenkirchen, which is basically an hour ride. It seems like UEFA are not too interested in the fan experience and how they're going to transport thousands and thousands of people around Germany. Really was a bit farcical and left a bad taste in the mouth. A lot of supporters pretty unhappy. Pretty unhappy about the transport situation, but very happy about Jude Bellingham and the England result. I'm not going to go too much into the game, but Bellingham, what an unbelievable talent. I mean, this kid really is going to be the best player in the world if he keeps going on his current trajectory. I mean, he can simply do everything. It was just breathtaking. And here's what the fans think of him after scoring his goal. It was really, really exceptional. The Schalke Arena, just a perfect place for those kind of acoustics. So, England topped the group, and we move on to day four. I'll be back, supposedly off the Dortmund, but we'll have to see if UEFA come up with the goods with the old credential. Until then, well, we'll see you soon.
You're not in business unless you're online. And you're not serious about being online unless you're with IONOS. They offer fast and flexible hosting, servers and cloud solutions for small and medium-sized businesses. IONOS is innovative, offering AI solutions such as website creation from scratch using just a few keywords, saving you time so you can focus on more important things. With their sustainable data center in Worcester, your digital growth and sustainability go hand in hand. Get started today at ionos.co.uk.
This is a paid advertisement by BetterHelp.
We are Chris and Rosie, the hosts of Shagged, Married, Annoyed. And if you've ever listened to our podcast, you might know that we're fans of therapy. So we don't lose sight of how to take care of ourselves.
Online shopping.
No, Rosie, would you?
Okay, all right. When add to cart is no longer your choice for inner peace, I get it. We highly recommend therapy to learn things like coping with stress or navigating grief.
Yes, and we are big fans of BetterHelp online therapy. We have been for a few years now. And with nearly 5,000 therapists in the UK, they can get you matched easily. And you can be on your way to...
telling your therapist about your latest purchase.
You can be on your way to feeling better in life.
For 10% off your first month of online therapy, visit betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
There's digging. And then there's super digging. There's food. And then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food. And then there's Baker's Superfoods.
Sign up to the Avis Preferred Loyalty Program and get 10% off every car rental. It's completely free and the benefits are instant. Baby, I feel real good and I wish I would. Including priority service when you pick up your car. And exclusive partner offers. We've made car hire more rewarding. Sign up for free at avis.co.uk.